The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome. It is Monday, December 10th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's especially going to be 420 in 20 minutes in Denver, Colorado, and all throughout Colorado in the Mountain Time Zone, where marijuana is officially legal today. That's right. You get your first legal 420 today. So we're going to celebrate with you today. We're very excited for our friends in Colorado. The governor there has signed Amendment 64 into law. We'll get to that in our hemp headlines. We'll get to that right after our first break. Also on today's show, real excited, Normal's Paul Armentano will be joining us. He's calling from the Bay Area. He's going to give us the legal perspective on what the federal government may do after Colorado and Washington have legalized. Also, we're going to take a look behind the headlines today at a bar in Olympia, Washington that has allowed patrons to smoke marijuana on the second floor. No punishment, no nothing. You can smoke marijuana on the second floor. We'll tell you all about how it's possible and what it has to do with tobacco. Very interesting story there. And for the radical rant today, we're going to get the truth behind per se DUID laws. I saw another report in a newspaper in the Tri-Cities of Washington that was spreading more erroneous information about the science behind per se DUID nanograms per milliliter, active THC in the blood, and all of that. We're going to talk about that in the Radical Rant. I'll give you the breakdown on what's real, what you really have to fear, and how we're going to get rid of per se DUID laws in this country. How we do it might surprise you. Also in today's show, time for some Daily Toker tunes at 20 after when we celebrate with our friends in Colorado. It's Christmas time, and on Roots Monday, we like to get into the reefer jazz. Today, we're going to give you a double shot from two very important potheads, vipers down to the bone. That's Louis Armstrong on one song and Gene Krupa on another song. So a couple of good vipers for our Roots Monday Daily Toker tunes. Before we get to all of that, we will get to our hemp headlines. And in the headlines today, we've got news about the governor signing the proclamation in Colorado to make marijuana legal in the state. Also, interesting news about headlights on Porsches in Amsterdam. Weird story out there. The fear of medical marijuana and I-502 with respect to driving for patients. CNN takes a look at a six-year-old medical marijuana patient, and more coming up.
You cut people, you smell trees till you get what you need now. Designer drugs and midget smokes to get through the day. You always get them so high.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Shena, yo Hector David, PKA the Dirtball, Vizca Raka, Hilatidin, a la or.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
This day was hard and your work was long and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock because it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show.
Now it's time for your 420 headline news. Kerry Gallagher's on holiday break. I'm Radical Russ Belville. Marijuana legalized in Colorado with governor's proclamation. Adults can possess up to an ounce. This from the Washington Post. Marijuana for recreational use became legal in Colorado Monday when the governor took the procedural step of declaring the voter-approved change part of the state's constitution. Colorado became the second state after Washington to allow pot use without a doctor's recommendation. Both states prohibit public use of the drug, and commercial sales in Colorado and Washington won't be permitted until after regulations are written next year. Governor Hickenlooper, a Democrat, opposed the measure, but had no veto power over the voter-approved amendment to the state constitution. He tweeted his declaration Monday and sent an executive order to reporters by email after the fact. That prevented a countdown to legalization as seen in Washington, where the law's supporters gathered to smoke in public. Hickenlooper said in a statement, quote, voters were loud and clear on election day, end quote. The law allowed him until January 5th to declare marijuana legal. Adults over 21 in Colorado may now possess up to an ounce of marijuana or six plants. Public use and sale of the drug remain illegal. Medical marijuana helps stem six-year-old seizures, from CNN.com. Six-year-old Jaden David violently shakes on the ground, his blue eyes vacant, and then filled with searing pain. The video from CNN shows an unvarnished look at seizure, something Jaden once experienced routinely. Not anymore, says his father, thanks to medical marijuana. Before he started taking a liquid, non-psychoactive form of marijuana, Jaden couldn't walk, eat solid food, or take a bath. He has Dravet syndrome, a rare and catastrophic form of childhood epilepsy. It has triggered seizures so frequent that 44 times he has been rushed to the hospital in an ambulance, his distraught father by his side. Jaden's doctors prescribed 22 anti-seizure pills a day, which controlled the seizures, but left him immobilized due to the side effects. On June 4, 2011, David gave his son marijuana. For the first time since Jaden was 4 months old, the boy went through an entire day without a seizure. The liquid, non-psychoactive form of marijuana that Jaden takes ensures the boy doesn't get high. In a laboratory, the marijuana is distilled down to mostly cannabidiols, which advocates say is the potent medicinal value of the drug. 18 states have legalized marijuana for medical uses or limited personal use. California, which has the nation's largest number of registered users, does not keep demographic data on its registrants. But Colorado has 45 registered users under age 18, Oregon reports 56 child users, and Montana has 55. Stolen Porsche headlights in Amsterdam reportedly being used to grow marijuana. From the Huffington Post. After a rash of recent thefts in Amsterdam, many are questioning whether there is a specific reason why thieves are only stealing Porsche headlights rather than other parts of the vehicle. One explanation is that marijuana growers are targeting Porsches for the distinctive high-intensity discharge xenon lamps, or HID headlights, which could provide what Autoblog calls ideal lighting solutions for growing the plant indoors. The energy-efficient headlights are attractive lighting options for marijuana growers since they have the ability to give off high heat while using little power. According to The Guardian, 35 headlights have been reported stolen from Cayenne and Panamera models in Amsterdam in recent months. In a video released last month, a man is seen sneaking into a Dutch Porsche owner's yard, quickly dissembling both front headlights and making off with the parts. While Porsche headlights are not the only xenon lamps being stolen in Amsterdam, they may be targeted because of the ease of theft. In October, a Florida circuit court judge granted hundreds of Porsche owners class action in a lawsuit alleging the headlights are too easy to steal. For young female pop stars, marijuana use ties into endorsements from the New York Times. Rihanna, age 24, is perhaps the most visible marijuana devotee among a number of young female pop stars, but she is not alone. Lady Gaga, age 26, is becoming increasingly vocal in her praise of the green stuff to her Little Monsters, smoking it on stage in Amsterdam at her stop of her Born This Way ball tour in September. There is also throwback singer Lana Del Rey, who passes a marijuana cigarette back and forth to a tattooed love interest in the video for her song Born to Die, which she raspily coos, "Keep making me laugh, let's go get high." Rihanna, Lady Gaga, and Ms. Del Rey might be joining counterculture tradition that only men had previously gotten away with, but taking a step further, they're integrating it with their endorsement deals. And that's our 420 headline news for today, Monday, December 10th, 2012. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines at a look at an Olympia, Washington state bar owner who's telling pot smokers it's okay to light up in the bar. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
All right, welcome. It's time for us to get behind the headlines here. It's 13 after the hour, and we're going north to Olympia, Washington, right off of exit 107 on the I-5, and a place called Frankie's Sports Pub. Bar owner Frank Schnarr has opened up the second floor of his Frankie Sports Bar and Grill in Olympia, Washington, to pot smoking. Now, it's not that Frankie is some big-time stoner. He hasn't smoked marijuana since his military service in the Vietnam era. He just recognizes a business opportunity when he sees one. He's already upgrading his bar and appetizer and munchie menu with a $4.20 theme. Now, we have two reasons why we can thank Frankie Schnarr for opening up what must be America's first marijuana-friendly bar. The obvious one is passage of Initiative 502 that legalized possession of 1 ounce of marijuana for all adults 21 and over. I wonder how long it will take someone who voted against I-502 to visit and token the town of Olympia at Frankie's, or worse, make some money by writing a review of it for a newspaper or a magazine. Counting down. The second reason is one I've been calling all marijuana smokers to support, and that's because Frankie Schnarr stood up for the rights of tobacco smokers to have a place to congregate and socialize with drink, dance, and games. You know, so in 2005, Washington State, in an off election year with barely 55% turnout, in that year, Washington voters passed Initiative 901, which at the time was called, quote, the nation's strictest statewide smoking ban. And it banned smoking in places such as bars, restaurants, clubs, bowling alleys, and non-tribal casinos. And it banned smoking within 25 feet of doors, windows, and vents. Now, Frankie Schnarr fought that smoking ban by making the second floor of his pub a members-only section. A private club called Friends of Frankie's cost you $10 to join the club and got it so it was not subject to that law. In 2008, the state's Supreme Court, in a decision that had to do with an American Legion Hall that was also suing for the right to be a private club with smoking, the state Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, upheld the smoking ban and ruled that it applied to private clubs with employees, with any employees. So, to get around that, all the servers working upstairs at Friends of Frankie's are volunteers who make a living solely off of tips and reimbursement for their travel expenses. Because if they were being paid as employees, well, then the secondhand smoke would affect them. So these tobacco smoking bans that have taken hold throughout the country are just another symptom of a prohibitionist mindset. Now, look, I understand people not wishing to breathe in other people's smoke, so I'm not against all smoking bans. We should maintain smoke-free public buildings and spaces that people have no choice in using. You know, bus terminals or post offices or even most workplaces. However, when we get to the public spaces and businesses that are voluntary to enter, like restaurants, bars, and nightclubs, I have some issue with smoking bans. We're really supposed to believe that the cocktail server's lungs are in some sort of major danger from exposure to secondhand smoke when there are coal miners in West Virginia breathing far worse air every day on the job? For the entertainment of millions, we can expect an NFL lineman's life expectancy to be 20 years less than average, but a room full of smokers who might like to be entertained with some live music have to be inconvenienced to protect the bartender? Now look, again, I'm not unsympathetic to folks who want to eat a meal, drink a beer, or dance to some music without coming home smelling like an ashtray. Believe me, I get it. I played music in smoky bars for 15 years, and I don't smoke tobacco cigarettes. I came home smelling like smoke, and back in the day when I had long hair, I used to have to wash my hair before I go to bed just because of the tobacco smoke. Believe me, I get it. But to ban all smoking in all restaurants, bars, and nightclubs is an overreaction, and it's born of discriminatory attitudes toward drug users, in this case, nicotine. There should be some restaurants, bars, and nightclubs that are smoke-free, certainly, but there should also be some that are allowed to cater to a smoking clientele. Now, to that end, I have long proposed that we license establishments like we do liquor. Create a smoking license. Let there be a fixed number of them in any county, however you want to number that, right? And of course, with a fixed number of them, with supply and demand, the cost of those licenses will soon grow and grow and grow. I know in some cities it's like six figures to get a liquor license. And let there be real stringent requirements for maintaining that license, like appropriate ventilation and smoke scrubbing and education. And let the license fees that we collect from these smoking licenses fund a special healthcare program for any employees of the licensed establishment. And require minimum hazard pay wages for employees. So maybe we have one bar where smoking's allowed and the drinks cost a dollar or two more. And we have a non-smoking bar where the drinks are cheaper. And everyone can choose where they want to work, where they want to go see music, and where they want to go have fun. Wouldn't that be a better solution for everyone than Frankie's loophole of a separate membership-only floor and volunteers braving the secondhand smoke for tips? If they're going to be up there working, obviously they are, how about we allow them to make a living wage, we protect them with a hazard pay of some sort for the damage they may do to their lungs, and we take care of their health care while they're doing it. Everybody wins. And again, it's not like every bar would be a smoking bar, every restaurant would be a smoking restaurant. Those licenses would be so prohibitively expensive by limiting how many there would be, there would only be a few places you could go for the exclusive experience of being able to smoke.
And if we can make that regulation work with tobacco, we can certainly make that regulation work with cannabis, where there has not been any data showing us a danger from the secondhand smoke of cannabis. The legends of the contact high are just that. They are legends. If you have exhaled smoke, the THC has already been metabolized by your lungs. People do not get contact highs unless we're talking about being in a closet or a van where it's hermetically sealed and you got tons and tons of people smoking all at once. Well, look at the time. I get to a little ranting in the behind the headlines, and before I know it, I turn around and there's Brian the Red. How you doing, Brian?
Oh my goodness, is it 4:20 already?
You're right on time.
Oh, well, it seems that happens quite often.
See what we can do about that. We'll be right back.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Hi, this is Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information.
Legalize me. Don't criticize.
Overjoyed. I've been cannabis activist for 40 years.
We're turning the corner on a failed policy that's been disastrous for our communities, and things are going to get better.
80 years ago, we repealed alcohol prohibition in this state. We did it prior to the federal government, and we're doing the same thing when it comes to marijuana. We are a step ahead, and we will continue to lead the way. It means I'm going to smoke a lot of weed tonight!
Some call it marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Some of them call it cannabis. Never mind, legalize it.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our daily Toker tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your daily Toker tunes.
All right, folks, if you've been watching the show for any length of time, you know that on Mondays we get into the reefer jazz. And today we are going to get into a little reefer jazz from one of our favorite Vipers out there, Louis Armstrong, and his tune Christmas in New Orleans. And then we're going to follow that up. This is going to be a double shot because these songs are kind of short. And, you know, Christmas is coming up. The holiday season's coming up. For those of you listening to the show regularly, we'll have to warn you that we take Christmas week and the New Year's week off. So there will be no new shows next week. I believe that's the next. No, I'm sorry. We are on next week, but the following week, the Christmas week, we will be off. So the 24th through January 4th, we'll be back on January 7th once Christmas week hits. So this week and next week, regularly scheduled. So we're going to pack in more songs on our daily Toker tunes to make up for it. Here we go. Let's give you the double shot. We start off with Louis Armstrong and the Benny Carter Orchestra singing Christmas in New Orleans. Then Gene Krupa, another famous Viper, with the Benny Goodman Orchestra and Jingle Bells. And after that, Paul Armentano joins us, so stay tuned.
Magnolia trees at night, sparkling and bright. Fields of cotton love, wintry white. When it's Christmas time in New Orleans, a barefoot choir and prayer fills the air. Mississippi folks gathering there, 'cause it's Christmas time in New Orleans. You'll see a Dixieland Santa Claus leading the band to a good old Creole beak. Golly, what a spirit! You can only hear it down on Basin Street. Your kids will disappear when you hear Hallelujah, St. Nicholas is here. When it's Christmas time in New Orleans.
Now we finish up our double shot, a little bit of the Benny Goodman Orchestra featuring Gene Krupa on the drums, the legendary Viper himself, who was busted for marijuana as well. This is Benny Goodman Orchestra with Jingle Bells. Benny Goodman Orchestra with Jingle Bells. When we come back, Paul Armentano.
Michael Phelps, Olympic superstar, 14 gold medals, world record holder. So much for that amotivational syndrome. Legalization is not likely to happen first at the federal level. It's going to happen state by state. We turn now to our 50 state legislatures and assemblies for the Russ Belville Show's Legalization Legislation Update.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Half past the hour, and joining us by telephone from the Bay Area, we have Paul Armentano, the Deputy Director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine on this historic day, Russ.
It sure is, and I'm glad that you brought that up. You know, this is the perfect segue for what's going on. I was available. I was up there in Seattle for Legalization Day on December 6th at midnight when it took place, and I didn't expect the next day to happen so soon. Tell our listeners about what's going on in Colorado today.
Well, as your listeners likely know, on Election Day, 55% of Colorado voters approved Amendment 64, which amends the state constitution to enact unprecedented legal protections for adult individuals who wish to possess marijuana or grow marijuana in the privacy of their own home for their own personal use. It also seeks to ultimately set up a regulated system where the state would license private individuals to commercially produce and distribute marijuana, again, to adults over age 21. The governor in Colorado had up to 60 days to codify this measure in the law, and we were under the impression that he would, in fact, take the full 60 days. But instead, he surprised many of us by this morning making these measures law effective immediately. So today, Colorado joins Washington in being only the second state in modern history to, under state law, make the adult possession and consumption of marijuana in private a non-criminal act.
Hmm. Do you think the public demonstrations in Washington state, you know, on a fixed time, had anything to do with him, you know, kind of bringing the surprise out?
If I had to speculate as to a reason, that would be one that might be rather high on my list, but I really don't think it's fair to speculate as to what motivations may or may not have had a role in this decision. I am simply pleased that the governor, who actually was one who publicly opposed Amendment 64 during the campaign, now acknowledges that this is the expressed intent and will of the voters, and that his office is not in any way going to try and interfere with the will of the voters. I should also mention that today in his announcement, he made clear that he has pulled together a 24-member task force to oversee the proper and appropriate implementation of this law. He has a number of different constituencies that are represented on this task force, including representatives from Normal.
Now, what do you make of the federal government's, well, seemingly in non-reaction to these legalization measures being passed? They've responded with a couple of canned responses. You know, the Controlled Substances Act will still be enforced. But other than floating maybe a trial balloon in the New York Times the other day about how they might crack down on an individual user, it doesn't seem like we've really heard the Obama administration weigh in on this. What do you make of that?
I think the administration is well aware of their limitations when it comes to their ability to any way impede with these unprecedented legal protections that are being allotted to the individual 21 and older consumer base in Washington and in Colorado. As you know, the federal government cannot mandate state prosecutors in Colorado or in Washington indict individuals for possession or use of cannabis. There's nothing in the Federal Controlled Substances Act that gives the federal government the power to mandate that state law enforcement resources are spent on these activities. And the voters of Colorado and Washington have made it clear that marijuana possession and in the case of Colorado cultivation as well are no longer illicit activities. Cannabis is no longer contraband as defined by the laws of those states. And there is really nothing that the federal government can do about it. It is highly unlikely that the federal government is going to federalize activity that was formerly criminal under state law in Colorado and in Washington. They don't have the manpower to do so. They don't have the public support to do so, and therefore they don't have the political will to do so. So I think rather than acknowledging that fact, the administration is content to really say nothing at all.
You know, even looking back through the years of prohibition and the way the government's responded to medical cannabis laws, it seems that they never really have been concerned with small-time possession or growing a couple of plants here and there, but it's that large-scale commercial distribution, production, retail sales that they have a problem with. And given that Colorado and Washington, in their laws, I believe with Colorado it's by July, maybe June or July 6th, they have to come up with this. For Washington, they have till December 2013 to come up with this. In trying to come up with those laws, won't they be engaging in a conspiracy to break federal laws? And how do you see that all working out with the federal response?
Well, obviously, nobody's got a crystal ball as far as it pertains to whether these two states are going to be able to set up a brick-and-mortar, above-ground regulated system for the commercial production, taxation, and distribution of cannabis to those over 21 who wish to purchase it. Now, in my mind, some of the strengths of these two laws were that the provisions to protect the individual would take effect almost immediately, while there was a grace period of up to 1 year built in for lawmakers to come up with these broader regulations. Now, I'm aware in Washington State, regulators actually want to move well ahead of the timeline that's been proposed in the law, and they're looking to try and implement the system in a period of time that would take less than the 1 year that they have allotted. And I'm not clear in Colorado whether they also wish to be on an expedited timetable. But the reality is, yes, if there is one aspect of these provisions where the federal government would appear to have some legal legs to stand on, if it wished to try and interfere with implementation, it would be regarding the state licensing system for those who wish to commercially produce and distribute cannabis. That's not to say that the federal government will, in fact, interfere in that process, as they have not interfered with state-sanctioned commercial, or I should say state-sanctioned regulatory systems regarding the production and distribution of medical marijuana in a handful of states that explicitly regulate that activity, like Maine, like New Mexico, and by and large in Colorado. So in my mind, it really remains to be seen, and this is going to be a transparent process. Clearly, lawmakers and regulators in Colorado and Washington are going to be trying to work with the federal government as they move forward with their regulations. The federal government clearly will have ample opportunity to play a role in this process if they wish to. And I do think in 6 months to 8 months, we will have a much clearer idea of what the federal government intends to do or what they don't intend to do regarding these broader regulations.
We're speaking with Normal's Deputy Director, Paul Armentano, also one of the co-authors of Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? And you make mention of the federal response, how the feds could be a part of this regulatory scheme. And one action that's been brought, of course, Representative Diana DeGetti, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Colorado, has proposed a federal bill, basically a version of Barney Frank's old state's rights to medical marijuana, saying feds let the states alone if they're going to try to regulate marijuana, give them an exception to the Controlled Substances Act. Do you have any updates on that and what prognosis it may have for this this new House?
Well, clearly, as folks know, this bill was introduced at the tail end of this congressional session. So no action's going to take place in the next few weeks. My hope is that this will be reintroduced, and I expect that it will be reintroduced in the next legislative session, and hopefully it will stimulate some debate. Last time I checked, I believe it has 11 co-sponsors. It's a rather broad cross-section of co-sponsors. It's not exclusively sponsors or representatives from Colorado and Washington. There's members from other states as well. It is bipartisan, and as folks may have seen from the Gallup poll that came out late last week, the American public strongly supports the notion of the federal government leaving states alone when and if they decide to legalize marijuana. According to the Gallup poll, 64% of respondents agreed that the Obama administration's response in these instances should be no response. And that is a much larger percentage of respondents supporting that issue than actually support the legalization of cannabis. So it's clear that there is supermajority support among the voters for allowing states to develop their own alternative policies to cannabis. Even more support for that than there is among the general public for legalizing cannabis outright. So hopefully the Obama administration will respect the sentiment of the voters.
I hope so. You know, with respect to how the dialogue has changed at the highest levels, you know, internationally, nationally, even in the state legislatures, I think the passage of I-502 in Washington and Amendment 64 in Colorado, I think that may be the best benefit. And I wanted to point you to something Tom Angel from Leap brought up, and that is in this new film, Breaking the Taboo, that came out on Friday. There's a quote from former President Bill Clinton, of course, Bill Clinton, who ramped up the war on marijuana consumers more than any other president, who says, quote, "We could have fighting and killing over cigarettes if we made it a felony to sell a cigarette or smoke one. So we legalize them. If all you do is try to find a police or military solution to the problem, a lot of people die and it doesn't solve the problem." End quote. So with respect to legalization, could it be that this is, you know, just the legalization in two states is enough to finally open this dialogue on a broader scale with respect to the war on drugs and mass incarceration?
I most certainly believe that it already has opened that dialogue. There is a new political landscape that we are living in. There is a newfound respectability among the major media in respect to the marijuana law or drug policy reform movement. We are now clearly seen as players. And that is very important when it comes to moving this dialogue forward. I agree with you, Russ. If we look back at alcohol prohibition and the way alcohol prohibition fell in this country, it did not fall because a majority of states abandoned alcohol prohibition. It fell when only a small number of states, I believe the grand total was 10, turned their back on alcohol prohibition. The lesson here is that alcohol prohibition had no teeth without the assistance and the enforcement of local and state law enforcement agencies. Cannabis prohibition is the very same way. This is a federally imposed policy, but it takes the actions of local and state law enforcement to keep this policy relevant. When a number of states turned their back on alcohol prohibition, when state law enforcement agencies were no longer there to give teeth to the federal prohibition, the federal government had no choice but to abandon its federal policy and leave the issue exclusively up to the states. I think we're going to see the very same lesson repeated here with cannabis prohibition. I don't think two states is enough to devolve this 75-plus year federal policy, but I don't think we're going to need a whole lot more than two states to ultimately get the federal government to seriously begin reconsidering this federal policy.
Good stuff there, Paul. And one last question before we go. You know, I had recently seen a video where someone had made a point that one difference with alcohol prohibition that we should point out is that with alcohol prohibition, we were taking something that a majority of the people enjoyed and something for which there was already a regulatory scheme. So that when we ended alcohol prohibition, a majority already liked to drink, and there were already laws we could go back to or structures that were already set in society and in law to govern how we would use alcohol. With marijuana prohibition, a majority does not smoke marijuana. In fact, maybe even a majority think it's a bad thing. And we're charting completely new territory with respect to cultural mores and the regulatory structure. So moving forward, creating this entirely new world of marijuana regulation, do you foresee any pitfalls? Do you have any advice for people as we form these new structures?
Yes, one size does not fit all. And that is a lesson that I hope we have learned with alcohol regulation. Even though we speak about alcohol being legal in this country, people need to keep in mind that alcohol regulations vary greatly from state to state. They are in line with the cultural mores of a particular region. And what may be suitable regulation in one part of the country wouldn't necessarily fly in another part of the country. Where I grew up, you can't buy alcohol after 8 p.m. You can't buy alcohol on Sundays. You can't buy alcohol on holidays. You can't buy alcohol at a gas station. You can't buy alcohol in a supermarket. You can't buy beer where you buy wine. And you can't buy beer or wine where you buy hard liquor.
Oh.
If that makes sense to you, you probably live in the state of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't make sense to you, well, then you likely grew up in another part of the United States that doesn't regulate alcohol in that manner. Cannabis is going to be the same way. The issue that we have as reformers now going forward isn't to try and articulate to a greater number of Americans this notion that marijuana should be legal, because a majority of Americans are already there. It is going to be now discerning what Americans mean and what they want when they say cannabis needs to be legal or cannabis ought to be legal, because there are many different types of regulatory schemes for legal commodities. And what regulatory scheme may be or may possess majority support in one region of the country may not be the same type or the appropriate scheme in another part of the country. And I think we need to recognize that and to embrace the fact that there are going to be different systems and different laws and different regulations.
All right. Well, Paul, that's always good advice, I think, and another example of how federalism and 10th Amendment might work in our favor for marijuana. Paul Armentano is the deputy director of Normal, co-author of Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving to People to Drink? You can find out more at normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Paul, thanks once again for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show.
Thank you, Russ.
All right, we come back. It's time for some radical rants. Stick around.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, once again, we're going to jump into the breach on this one, and you'll notice during my interview with Paula Armentano, I did not bring this subject up at all, because if you think I'm sick of it, oh my God, is Paula Armentano sick of this subject. And it is the subject of per se DUID, something that keeps coming up here because of Washington State and I-502 and its new imposition of a 5 nanogram per se DUID for marijuana. This was a article I picked up from Seattle Times. I think it was from a local, picked up from a local paper as well, but it's from the Tri-Cities, Pasco, Kennewick, Richland, which are a very, very conservative part of Washington State. And I just wanted to read this little part for you. Tri-Cities medical marijuana patients are worried the passage of Initiative 502 will mean the end of their ability to legally drive. While the law is silent on medical marijuana patients, it does set a level for driving under the influence of marijuana that many patients are concerned they cannot meet. Kennewick's Hippies store co-owner Tim Adams... Kennewick's Hippies. Okay. Store owner Tim Adams said the DUI provision caused him and other medical marijuana patients to vote against the new law. That would be Kennewick's Hippies in Kennewick, Washington, voted against I-502, just in case you're keeping score. The DUI provisions mean someone would have to wait 4 to 5 weeks after smoking marijuana to be sure they would pass the blood test, he said. The body releases toxins in waves so that the limit may still be in the bloodstream, even though the person does not feel any effects, Adams said. Well, I can understand where this guy who owns Kennewick's Hippies is probably right up to date on PubMed and the latest research with respect to blood concentrations of Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol in whole blood and plasma. I'm betting at Kennewick's Hippies, they really research that stuff in depth. But what bothers me about this is not this guy and his misinformation about per se DUID. It's that the story being broadcast by the Associated Press doesn't bother to do the basic journalism to ask, a scientist to back up any of that stuff. They just float that stuff right out there in the Seattle Times where all of the paranoids and all of the people that are, think everybody's out to get them are going to say, oh, see, I'm not going to be able to drive to 4 to 5 weeks. Oh. Look, let's get to the facts. Number one, for most tokers, the vast majority of you out there, when you smoke pot, and by the way, let's clear one thing up right away. We're talking about active THC in blood. We are not talking about inactive metabolites on a P-test. We are not talking about what they catch you for when you try to get a job and you pee in a cup and they found out that you smoked a joint last weekend. That's not what we're talking about here. This is active THC in in the blood. The actual molecule that causes the high in marijuana actively in still in your bloodstream. Most tokers, the vast majority of tokers, will be below 5 nanograms 4 hours after smoking. And we're talking about everybody from the I smoked one joint this year at the high school reunion guy to I smoke a joint on the weekends guy to I like to unwind with a joint at the end of the night guy. You're going to be fine 4 hours after smoking. Going to be fine when you wake up the next morning. But to also be fair, constant cannabis consumers who consume a lot all the time, and notice that I did not say patients. This is the one thing that really pisses me off about this issue is when people from the medical marijuana community go, oh, it's unfair to patients. No, it's unfair to anybody who smokes marijuana all the time, whether they're a patient or not, like me, like Brian, like a lot of people we know. So if you want to argue about this, get off the patient high horse and start talking about all frequent consumers of cannabis. To me, it's offensive to be fighting for some sort of exception just for medical patients. No, if it's either impairing or it's not impairing. Either I smoke it all the time and I have a resistance to it, or I do not. It's not some special magical tolerance that is born out of having some other affliction. Healthy people who smoke pot all the time are probably better drivers than the other people that are smoking pot all the time for their chronic pain or whatever, just for the fact that we're healthy and don't have the chronic pain. Regardless, let's get right down to it. Per se, DUID laws are completely unfair, but the way that the opponents of them are trying to fight them is not going to win them any battles. It's not going to win. The framing of this is always going to make it look like you're fighting for the right to drive high. When you come out and say things on CNN like, well, I wake up in the morning at 4 to 5 times the legal level, nobody thinks that you're then going to not smoke the whole rest of the day before you drive. If you're waking up at 20 to 25 nanograms, then the listener in the audience can infer that sometime during the day, you're going to be much, much higher than that. Else you wouldn't be at a baseline 20 to 25. So that argument works against you. It always will work against you. All that a person has to do is to go to the archives of Weed Wars and see Stevie D'Angelo eating some sort of edible and saying he's timing it to make it across traffic in time, because Lord knows there's never any traffic jams in the Bay Area. So if you're going to argue this, and I'm on your side with this because I believe per se DUIDs are wrong as well, the way to argue it is to show that they don't work. They're not going to get what people want to get. We have to get behind the fact that people want to catch impaired drivers. People don't want impaired drivers on the road. SMOF is not an illusion. It's a reaction to a very real fear for people, and that is somebody going to get high on behind the wheel and kill them and wreck into them or hurt them or their family. So admit that and recognize that that's true. The fight against this is not to say patients have a tolerance or we need to make an exception to patients. It's to say that what you're trying to do isn't going to work. It's not really going to catch the people who are super stoned, because the people who are super stoned are going to be able to get away with it. That's what we need to show, is that by the time you get to the point of testing someone's blood, it's already beyond the point of where you should have caught them. We need to point out that impairment testing is better than relying on some nanograms on some test, because then we're actually rooting out what we want to get after. And maybe politically, we're just at a point where you cannot get around the people's want for a bright line and law enforcement's want for something that's analogous to a blood alcohol. If that's the case, maybe we need to argue for a standard, but a standard that is so high, pardon the pun, that only people who could actually be really impaired would trip it. Maybe 100 nanograms. If you're over 100 nanograms, it's pretty indicative of the fact that you've recently smoked pot. Very recently. Maybe we find that middle ground. Politics is about the art of the possible. We need to determine whether or not fighting off per se DUIDs is even possible at this political point. And if it's not, start staking out some ground for a limit that is something that's realistic. Something that someone who's taking care and being responsible couldn't possibly trip. In the meantime, marijuana's legal in Washington State. And I just advise you drivers out there, do what you've always been doing. If you haven't been getting pulled over, if you haven't been getting DUIs, keep it up. We'll get this fixed. We'll get it changed. But now we're doing it as legal consumers and not criminal potheads. Hey, that's all the time we've got for Hour 1. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Stick around for Hour 2. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down super.